Support for NPR and the following message come from Carvana, on a mission to make car buying more convenient and affordable than ever before. In minutes, you can browse thousands of options under $20,000. Visit Carvana.com or download the app today to get started.
Hey there, it's the NPR Politics Podcast. I'm Tamara Keith. I cover the White House. And if it wasn't for this next voice, it's quite possible I never would have gotten the chance to cover the White House.
President Carter said that he is committed to a universal, comprehensive plan that will provide basic health coverage to all Americans. The hearings have been about more than the sale of arms to Iran and the diversion of funds to the Contras. The events surrounding the Iran-Contra affair, they've been about two different...
Then what happens? Well, it's most likely that there are not enough votes in the House of Representatives to impeach the president.
That's Cokey Roberts. Cokey, along with Nina Totenberg and Linda Wertheimer, paved the way for women to cover politics. They're known as the founding mothers of NPR and established our network not just as a serious news organization, but as a place that lifted up new voices. Cokey gave me and a lot of other aspiring journalists good advice along the way.
So what is a woman's place? For most women, it's many places. Different places at different times. For almost all women, it's the place of nurturer, whether for the planet or one small creature on it. We've learned it from our mothers, both in word and deed. We teach it to our daughters in the knowledge that they must carry on the culture and care for it. Even as they go forward in this new millennium, knowing things we never knew, they will be connected back to those women in Marathon, Greece. From that continuity, they will derive the strength to make their place wherever they think it should be.
Cokey passed away a few years ago from breast cancer, and her husband, Steve Roberts, a renowned journalist in his own right, is out with a new book about her legacy. And I am here both with Nina and Steve Roberts. Steve is the author of Cokey, A Life Well Lived. Thanks for being with us.
Pleasure, Tam.
So I wanted to know... You've written two books with your wife. What made you decide to write this book about Cokey Roberts?
Well, you know, people ask me all the time, what is it like being a guy married to such a famous woman? And my answer is, you know, if I had a problem with it, I wouldn't have spent 2 years writing a book about her. Right? The more I got into it, the more I realized that there were really two Cokeys and two stories, you know, and the more familiar one is the story about how so many young women for a generation heard her on public radio or watched her on TV and said, I can be that smart. I can be that strong. I can be myself. And that was a marvelous legacy. But that was the public Cokey. The private Cokey, which Nina knew very well, was a woman who did something good for somebody else every single day of her life. And it was these private acts of friendship and charity and loyalty that in some ways, as I did the book, became even more important to me. And for a very simple reason, not everybody can be a TV star or radio star like Cokey or Tamara or Nina, but everybody can be a good person. And everybody can learn something from Cokey's private life that they can apply to their own. And I had one of her friends say, I'm not going to have one of those bracelets that said WWJD, what would Jesus do? I want one that says WWCD, what would Cokey do? And I think a lot of her friends felt the same way. And that's really the main message I wanted to convey in the book.
I think a day doesn't go by that I don't think, what would Cokey do? And because she was such a good person, she would give me a pass sometimes. Sometimes I say, I'm too tired to do that. I need to take care of myself here for this afternoon. And she would have said, go for it, girl. You know, you can do it tomorrow. And if you can't, you'll make up for that. She was such a human, giving, loving person.
And Steve and Nina, I want you both to reflect on how Cokey came to NPR and sort of the struggle that she had for the early part of her career to be accepted as a woman in journalism. Steve, you write about for a long time, she was your wife. She was sort of the trailing spouse.
Well, for 11 years and four moves. We got married in 1966. We moved four times from my job to New York, California, Europe, back to Washington. She always worked part-time jobs in those places, but I've told this story many times, and it does involve Nina. I came back to the Washington Bureau of the New York Times, fall of 77. I've given a desk. I sit down. I look around. There's a young woman sitting next to me who I don't recognize. I introduce myself. She said her name is Judy Miller. And I said, I don't recognize your byline. Where did you used to work? And she said, National Public Radio. And I said, what's that? Because NPR had been in existence for 6 years, but we had been in Europe for four of those years, and I just didn't know. And Koki was very unhappy about being back in Washington. She wanted to stay abroad. She knew once we got back to town that we'd never leave, which of course turned out to be true. So I said to Judy, what's public radio? And she started explaining it to me. And I said, wait, that sounds like the perfect place for my wife to work. What do I do? I've got this wife crying herself to sleep every night in Bethesda. And she said, call my friend Nina Totenberg. And I called Nina and she said, I know who you are and I know who Koki is. Get me her resume tomorrow. And at that point, the NPR offices, New York Times offices were only about a block or two apart. And I walked over, and this was the first time, Tam, that I saw the old girls network at work, where women like Nina and women like Linda could help other women in the ways men had always done.
I think we felt very much lucky, ultimately, that we had broken the glass ceiling, and very few women at that moment had, and that it was our responsibility to make sure that other people had a chance to do that too. And, you know, it's very different from today. My motto then and still is pick your battles, because if you want to fight over everything, you'll get nothing. But that is not something that I say out loud very often, because a lot of young women would not agree with that. But at the time, we picked a lot of battles that were not for ourselves. They were for other young women.
And, you know, the other thing that was, from my perspective, that was so interesting, Tamara, was that, look, I worked two blocks away at the Washington Bureau of the New York Times, right? And the New York Times had had white male White House correspondents for 100 years. It was this deeply encrusted stereotype. And you walk two blocks away to NPR. It was young. It was nimble. It was agile. It didn't have anything like the same weight of history. And so the ability of NPR to put women, Nina always says it's partly because NPR didn't pay very well. That's certainly true.
It was but
there are no men who would have worked for what they paid us.
But more importantly, NPR was able to reset these models because Nina and Linda and Koki were part of a wave of a generational wave coming into the business. Before that, there were occasional women. There were the Barbara Walters of the world, but they were the first group in any numbers, and that changed the whole concept of what it meant to be a reporter, to have these women in these prominent roles. So NPR not only was important in terms of its own voice, but it served as a model, I think, for many other news organizations around town, because they changed the stereotype. They changed the image of what it meant to be a powerful and important political reporter.
We are going to take a quick break. And when we get back, Koki as a mother.
The Indicator from Planet Money is a daily podcast that helps you make sense of what's happening in the economy. And video games are a growing slice of that economy, with billions of people around the world identifying as gamers. That's why we're dedicating a week-long series to the growing business of video games. Listen to the Indicator from Planet Money podcast on NPR.
In this country, more than two local newspapers are closing down each week. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to the NPR network at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
The Indicator from Planet Money is all in on video games. Not just because they're a fun hobby. Video games are one of the fastest growing businesses worldwide, worth more than the film and music industries combined.
We're seeing some games that are really taking, $500 million to make.
We're taking a week-long look at the video game industry. Listen to the Indicator from Planet Money podcast on NPR.
And we're back, and we're here with Nina and Steve. I do want to talk about Cokie as a mother. She had children young, sort of had children before her career, which is not the normal path in Washington, well, not these days, at least. And she was frequently giving advice, encouraging women who she worked with not to be news nuns, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And also, she had this thing where she gave mothers permission to both be mothers and to be professionals.
Oh, that's absolutely right. I think there are generations of women at NPR who married and had children, at least in part, because Cokie was so encouraging. And she was such a model. As you say, she had two children, six grandchildren. They were a very important part of her life. And she never hid it. She gloried in it. And so many young women said to me, we wanted to be like Cokie. We wanted to be in that club because Cokie was in that club. And you mentioned the phrase news nuns, and I had never heard that phrase before I did this book, but so many women said to me, you know, there were women in an earlier age who felt they had to choose between professional accomplishment and personal satisfaction. And to get ahead, you just got to discard your family. And so many of these younger women of your generation, Tam, came in and said, wait, that's not the life I want. I also want a family. And she encouraged them very strongly, partly just because of the model, but also because people literally lined up outside her room to seek advice. And she also always was, she was a total baby freak. If there was a baby, within her zip code, she found it and grabbed it. And she was the first person in everybody's maternity ward. I mean, she just loved babies. And there was a young woman named Alana Marcus, who was a producer at ABC, and Cokie had encouraged her to get married. And then she has her first baby. And Cokie is the first person in the maternity room, the first person in the ward, scoops up the baby and starts making the sign of the cross on the baby's forehead. And Lana says, Cokie, you know that's a Jewish baby. And Cokie says, oh, I know, but we're just covering our bases here. I'll just baptize him.
You know, I remember, I see this all the time still. I mean, Cokie died 2 years ago, but her influence lives on in all of these young women. So I once saw Tamara Keith, for example, I think it was on a stakeout, and she's reading some sort of a children's book to one of her children while she's waiting for whatever she's waiting. I must have been on the Hill that day myself, and I saw her and I thought, this is the hand-me-down, the mental hand-me-down from Cokie. So
it's there.
You know, Linda Wertheimer used to, because they shared, they covered NPR, Congress together for many years for NPR. By the way, also, while I was covering the Hill for the New York Times, so we commuted together, we had lunch together, we covered the same stories together. And Linda talks about being in this cramped little booth on Capitol Hill. 3 o'clock would come around and an alarm would go off in Cokie's head, because that's when the kids were coming home from school. And Linda says, you know, you would listen carefully and Cokie would say, now, Rebecca, our daughter, who's now 50, now, Rebecca, you had a commitment to go to your piano lesson. You have to go. And, you know, she was juggling like so many moms do, but she wasn't hiding it. And she didn't hide her motherhood, and she didn't hide her femininity either. A woman named Sarah Just, who worked for years at ABC, is now the producer of the NewsHour on public broadcasting. Sarah talks about when she worked at Nightline at ABC, and she and Cokie would be sitting in a conference room waiting for a meeting to begin. And they would be doing two things. They both did needlework together. And they also would be talking about recipes because they both love to cook. And Sarah tells a story about as the men start filtering into the room, Cokie, maybe we should put away our needlework. Maybe we should stop talking about recipes. Cokie says, no, I want them to know that we're women. I want them to know that we're different. I want them to don't put away your needlework and don't stop talking about recipes, because she was very clear that she was sending a message to the guys walking into that room, deal with us as women.
I thank you so much, both of you, for taking the time to tell us a little bit more about Cokie. I mean, she is coming off as Saint Cokie in this interview and in the book, but it's real.
Let me be very clear. She was not a saint. And no. She would be the first person to tell you that.
It is. It's true. She wasn't a saint. But I think in fairness, Cokie did, among the reasons that she could do so much is that she didn't need a lot of sleep. And so she had more time. She made more time, but she had more time. And there were moments where she leaned on other people. She leaned on Steve. You know, I remember when her sister died, I have them emblazoned in my memory because she was very composed during the funeral. But when we went to the gravesite and it was pouring rain in Princeton, and I remember her literally leaning on Steve and him, I have this vision of him with his arm around her. She leaned on me sometimes. Everybody needs that sometimes, and you can be that person for other people sometimes. And I can't do it every day. I can't do it as much as Cokie did, but I can do it more than I used to, and that's what she taught me.
Nina Totenberg, Steve Roberts, thank you so much for being here on the NPR Politics Podcast.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, Tamara.
Thank you, Tam.
And thank you for listening to the NPR Politics Podcast.
Across America, history is often recorded on small markers. You've probably seen them on the sides of roads, in front of buildings, in the middle of nowhere. NPR's Laura Sullivan spent a year investigating thousands of markers and found a distorted version of America's history, but also curiosities, humor, and joy. Listen to the new episode of The Sunday Story on the Up First podcast from NPR.
Every time you drive your car, have a package delivered, or get on a plane, you're polluting the climate. But it doesn't have to be that way.
Nature is powerful. Why don't we use it to our advantage?
Meet the people working on cleaner ways to get around on Here and Now Anytime from NPR and WBUR. Transportation Climate Solutions on Here and Now Anytime, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Taylor Swift has dropped a new album. She is the biggest pop star in the world, and everything she does makes news.
I gasped. I was like, oh my God, I've been there, and you can identify with it.
For a breakdown of Taylor Swift and her new album, The Tortured Poets Department, listen to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.